gentleman who's a frequent guest on the show for good reason. He spent 29 years in the National Football League as a personnel executive, starting with the Buffalo Bills way back in 1981. He spent 16 years in personnel with the New York Giants and 9 years with the Chicago Bears, most of that time as the Bears Director of College Scouting. He is a columnist for the National Football Post. He writes the Director's Report for National Football Post. Buffalo native Greg Gabriel joins us live right now. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Murph. How you been?
I've been okay. We are really at the crunch time of preseason with the cutdowns coming. We're right between the cutdowns. And you wrote in a post just last week how this is a fascinating time of the year, always a fascinating time. What's so fascinating about the makeup of these rosters, Greg?
Well, it's how you go about making the final 53. Different teams do it different ways. There's some game playing done. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that young players who were cut just in the last couple days will end up on practice squads. One of the reasons being is, the thought is, well, if they got cut at 75, how good could they be? Well, some teams want to slip guys through that way. It's just part of the gamesmanship. And then you've got, situations where, what's your final makeup going to be? How many receivers are you going to have? How many linebackers? How many running backs, et cetera? How many quarterbacks are you going to keep? And, and then special teams plays into that. So that becomes part of the process. You could have a running back. Let's say you're going to keep three running backs and your third best running back isn't a good special teams player. Well, the next back, who may be a real good special teams player, may make the squad over the third best running back because, he could be a core special teams player.
Hey, you've been in that room, obviously, with the Giants and the Bears over the years, Greg. Do those become fights, arguments anyway, between coaches and personnel people and even special teams coaches who, maybe bang the table and say, I need that guy for our teams?
Yeah, well, not really. I mean, yeah, I've seen it happen a few times, but generally speaking, the process, you go into camp thinking who your 53 is going to be, on paper, and it obviously doesn't always work that way because you're going to have a few players that excel at camp that you weren't really expecting to excel as much as they did, or on the other side, you could have a veteran who you were expecting to still get a productive year out of really slips off and say, you know what, I don't think we can get anything out of him. He may get hurt during the year. His production has dropped off. His athleticism has dropped off for whatever reason. So there's always going to be a difference in the squad from how you go into camp and how you come out of camp. And it might be as many as five or six players. But generally, I think, if you wrote 45 names down on the first day of camp, those 45 are going to be on the roster at the final 53. It's those last, say, eight names that could change and fluctuate.
How much variance is there from team to team in the league, Greg, as far as who makes the call and how much authority the head coach has compared to the GM and maybe other decision makers?
Well, that's a great question, and there's really only one person on each club that has final say on the 53-man roster. Generally speaking, it's either the general manager or the head coach, and it's in his contract. And in essence, and I put this in the article in the NFP, is that that guy is really the boss. We go back to, and when I started off in Buffalo part-time, and Chuck Knox was the head coach. Well, Chuck Knox was the boss. He was the head coach. The general manager had final say on all football decisions. And, whatever he said was going to be the makeup of the final roster, that's what it was. And then, Bill Belichick in New England has final say. But then a lot of clubs, it's the general manager. There can be disagreement. But generally speaking, if you have a good relationship between the head coach and the general manager, there may end up being disagreement only about a few players. And a lot of it is, are you going to keep a veteran over a young player or vice versa? Because, the general manager is always looking into the future. I had one guy one general manager told me a while ago, he goes, you know what the definition of a general manager is? I said, no, what? He goes, it's to save the club from the head coach. It's because, the general manager has to have, look far out and really look at the outlook of the club year after year after year, and a coach has to win every year, so he's got tunnel vision.
And I guess it doesn't, there's no one way to do it right. I mean, what's the Bill Parcells famously said, you know, he wanted to shop for the groceries. Is that the best way to structure it, that the coach would have final authority over the roster? What's been your experience in that?
You know, really, I think it depends on the experience of the coach and how long he's been in the league. You know, you get a young coach who has total control, and he's not, you know, as great as, say, an evaluator as some of the personnel people. And, you know, he could make some decisions that turn out not to be the right decision. You're not going to know that until, say, weeks into the season. But I know, you know, generally speaking, you know, when you're talking, say, about offensive linemen and stuff, you know, the coaches want to keep the experienced guy because they trust him. He knows his assignments. Where the young guy, they don't know if they have to throw him into the fire, if he's going to, you know, make the right decision on every down. And obviously, a broken assignment can lead to an injury or a big loss on a play. So the coaches always want to go with experience, when, especially along the line when you get down with this cut-down time.
Live on the line with Greg Gabriel, three decades of experience in NFL personnel decision-making with the Bills, the Giants, the Bears. He's director of college scouting for Chicago for 9 years. He's a columnist for National Football Post, and one of his recent columns, The Making of the 53-Man Roster. We're in a discussion here in Buffalo, Greg, about second and backup quarterbacks, and you write that the days of three quarterbacks on the roster being the standard may be falling by the boards.
Yeah, and I think this year might be changing again, just looking at how some teams are doing it. And it really depends on who your three are. If your third quarterback is a young guy and you think you can slip him through waivers and he's got practice eligibility, then, you know, obviously that's what you're going to do, and you're going to have your third man on the practice squad because, you know, theoretically he's not going to play anyway. So what difference does it make if he's on the practice squad or on the active roster? The difference is really to him as far as getting an accrued season and his paycheck, but to the team it makes a difference because he's not going to play. But if you've got a young quarterback that, you had a draft, say, in the first four or five rounds and other teams like that player, well, then you're taking a big chance trying to waive him because chances are he will get claimed.
Because everybody wants a young developmental quarterback, right? And some teams
true, and that's why some guys, you know, they don't play some of these guys during the preseason, with the thought being that, well, if we don't play him, people aren't going to think he's any good, and then we can, you know, we can slip him through waivers and put him on the practice squad. But far too often, you see, a lot of teams, they get into this process, they go back, they don't necessarily go on what they saw on tape during the preseason. They go with what they saw in college, and they'll use the college reports on rookies. And if you like the guy going into the draft, you should like him 4 months later after, you know, the cutdown process.
So I'm sure teams are different, but in your experience, Greg, hello, Greg, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that. We had a little hit on the phone line. In your experience, how important are preseason games when it comes to making these roster decisions? A lot of times we as fans and observers think they mean everything. You're telling me not necessarily, huh?
No, I think it's part of the equation, not the total equation, because, you know, there's practice every day, and what you do in practice, what you do in the classroom, that counts, and that counts sometimes even more than what happens in games, because you can't control what happens in a game time situation. And, you know, let's say, you know, you go into a preseason game and you want to get somebody 15 snaps, but because of the flow of the game, you just can't do that, so you're not able to evaluate him in that situation, but you have been able to evaluate him every day in camp. And on top of that, you know what he's doing in the classroom. You know how he picks up your offense or your defense. You know what his work habits are. You've worked with him every day. So, you know, it's really a two-part equation. I'm going to say it's more practice than the preseason games. The preseason games are, you know, you don't have as much hitting anymore in camps the way we used to have it 10, 12, 15 years ago. So I think that's really to get people acclimated to hitting more than anything else.
Well, you know, we've seen Hard Knocks on HBO. Many of us have. We've seen those personnel meetings where the assistant coaches are asked for their opinions. Do teams ever just totally override what the assistant coach thinks? And how do they handle that afterwards? I mean, how does an assistant coach feel when he's sat at these meetings and say, this guy is not going to help us, and then they cut to 53 and that guy's on the roster? What do they do then?
No, you've got to listen to the coach, because obviously he has worked with the player and he knows the player as well as anybody, at least in your situation, since he's, you know, been with your club. And you can't, I've learned over the years that it's really difficult to try to say, shove a player down a coach's throat and say, we're going to keep this guy and you got to coach him. It's just not going to work. You know, the coach is going to find ways for the player not to succeed. I'm not saying that he's going to go out of his way to do that. He just doesn't, you know, he's not motivated. You want to have the coach to be motivated to work with the player and coach the player. And generally speaking, that's why, you know, go back to the draft process. When you send the coaches out to work out players, part of that process is getting the coach to learn about the player and want to work with that player. There's a motivation on both sides. So, you know, generally speaking, if you draft the player the coach wants, that's going to carry over into the preseason and down to cutoff time.
Hey, Greg, so practically speaking, the Bills and most of the NFL teams are playing tomorrow night, and the cutdown is Saturday. So practically speaking, what will happen on Friday? The coaching staff meets first to talk about this, or is it an entire coaching staff personnel meeting on most teams?
Well, there's going to be personnel meetings, but there's going to be decisions made before, right now. There's been decisions made right now on certain players. And, you know, you got 22 players to cut. Sometimes you're going to cut more than that because you want to have waiver acquisitions or a trade acquisition or whatever. So, you know, a lot of times you may cut half the players Friday morning, you know, and especially if you're playing at home. Bills are playing at home. They may end up, you know, cutting 10 or 12 guys Friday morning and then finish the cut process on Saturday. And a lot of teams will do that across the league. You know, the guys, and there's going to be guys that you want to cut, and you know you want to cut. You're not going to play them in the game tomorrow night because you don't want them to get hurt. You don't want to take the chance of them getting hurt.
What about the breakdowns at each position? We've talked a lot about that on the show in recent days, in particular how it applies to the Bills wide receivers. Some of us think the Bills could and maybe should keep as many as six. My partner on the broadcast, Mark Kelso, is saying they should keep seven, which seems awfully high to me. But who makes that call, and how do they balance out those sort of considerations?
Well, that's obviously, you know, that's all part of the process, and some of those decisions have already been made. Put it this way, you know, the roster's 53, but in essence it's 50 because you got three special teams players, you got your two kickers and your snapper. So now you got to divide up the roster spots by 50 players, and scheme has something to do with it. You know, whether you have a 4-3 scheme or a 3-4 scheme as far as defense, that's going to change your allotment of defensive linemen and linebackers. And some of the linebackers, say if you got a 3-4 scheme like Buffalo ran last year, then, you know, you may keep some people that are like combo guys who can play outside linebacker and play down in a pass rush situation. So that comes into play. You know, a lot of deep 4-3 teams may keep as many as 8 defensive linemen, but if it's a 3-4 team, maybe the max is 7 or 6, you know, depending on the club. And the same goes with wide receivers. You know, you got a head coach who's an offensive-minded head coach. He may opt to keep 6 or 7 wide receivers. I think a lot of teams keep 6. But when you do that, your 4th, 5th, and 6th players, they've got to be, or at least 2 of those guys got to be core special teams players, because that's just part of the roster makeup. And special teams always plays an important role in the final roster makeup.
And Greg, how big a role does money play, salary play, in the final roster makeup?
You know, I think it depends on your salary cap, really. You know, I read, and I don't know how true it is, that, you know, New England asked Logan Mankins yesterday to take a pay cut, and then when he didn't take a pay cut, they shipped him off to Tampa Bay. But Belichick has a history of trading players before their time is due, so to speak. You know, he trades them a year earlier, not a year late, and then he gets value for them, and he keeps accumulating these high draft picks. And he's had a very successful tenure at New England because of that. I mean, Buffalo had one of his players years ago, Ty Law, the defensive back. And, you know, so these type of things you see happen all the time. And if you've got a solid salary cap situation and you have plenty of room under the cap, then I don't think the salary really going to play into it that much. But if you're tied up against the cap, because you got to have some room to maneuver during the season. You got to have, you know, there's going to be injuries. You're going to have money to go out and sign players if there is injuries. And you know, generally you want, say, you know, $2.5, $3, or $4 million available for that purpose. And so if you're going to be tight, if you're sitting right now and you're only a million and a half under the cap, well, then you may have to have some guys take a haircut if they want to stay on the team.
We're live with Greg Gabriel, columnist for the National Football Post, longtime personnel man for the Giants and the Chicago Bears. We talk about setting the roster at 53, got to be done by 4 o'clock on Saturday. But from recent experience here in Buffalo last year, for instance, and even around the league, these rosters are almost in a constant state of flux. And what the roster looks like Saturday at 4 p.m. this Saturday, it might look a little bit differently 7 days after that going into the first game, right?
Yeah, I think generally speaking you have more roster moves in the first 2 weeks than in any other time during the season. And it's people just setting the roster. Part of it is with veteran players, so to speak. There's going to be veterans out there. If he's a vested vet and he's on the roster for the very, you know, for the opening game, his pay is guaranteed for the season, and that counts against your cap. So if you cut him at the 53-man cut down and then bring him back after game one, now he's being paid on a per-game basis. He may be making the same salary, but you're not going to be hit with the entire year's salary, you know, just as long as you keep him. So you'll see a lot of veterans who are cut this Saturday being back on rosters a week from now, 10 days from now.
You know, the Hall of Fame coach here, Marv Levy, used to say, and this is, you know, I'm showing my age here, but he said it 20, 25, almost 30 years ago, you go to training camp with your team. The more I think about it, and when I think about these cutdown dates looming, I don't think that's the case anymore, especially at the back end of the roster. What do you think?
Well, I can agree with that. That's, you're always looking to better your roster, and if somebody else has a player that can't make their club and you think can help you, then you put in a claim or you try to sign him as a free agent when he's on the street. I mean, and it really goes back to how good your scouting department is, and this I mean your pro scouting department, because they're evaluating the pro tape of these guys on a daily basis, and you're always looking to find somebody that's a little better than the guy you have on the bottom end of each position.
And continuity be damned? You don't worry about continuity or knowing the system in that case?
Well, part of it is what kind of system has he played in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a vet who's played 7, 8, 9 years in the league, it's not going to be hard for him to pick up different systems. There's not a big difference. It's terminology. You know, basically everybody runs the same play. There's different terminologies. Obviously, scheme, it's different. And then, you know, if you're running a 3-4 or 4-3 on defense, because then you're looking at different types of linemen to play in your front seven position. But other than that, a lot of the things are the same. And if the guy's smart enough, he should have no problem picking up your scheme.
Hey, Greg, in your almost 30 years in the personnel world of the NFL, and you don't have to use names, but can you recall any cut-down day scenarios that were particularly memorable? Maybe, you know, when you squeezed a guy through waivers and were able to sign him back to the practice squad, or you know, anything like that happened with either the Bears or the Giants that you might want to share with us?
Well, you know, there's some thing. I know there's players, and this is when I was, you know, with both the Giants and the Bears, where, you know, there's guys going back to the draft. There's guys you liked, and for whatever reason, either they signed with another club as a free agent or were drafted in the lower rounds, and you watch those players. We used to have this saying, say, I want to be the guy to cut them. So, and if you're watching them during preseason and you think that he may not fit onto their 53-man roster, and you're anticipating that he's going to get cut, you know, you may start lobbying the agent a little bit and say, hey, you know, if he gets cut, we may have this may be a good situation for him. And that's worked to our advantage in the past, where we've been able to put guys on the practice squad that got cut, and then turned out, you know, a year later they turn out to make the squad. So I'll put it that way, and I wouldn't want to say any more about it.
I'm confused. What do you mean, I want to be the guy that cut him, though? What does that mean?
Well, in other words, you like the guy. I mean, yeah. I mean, there was a deep, this goes back years ago, and it was when I was with Chicago. There was a defensive lineman. It was a Canadian kid from Michigan, or went to Michigan, and, you know, he grew up in Canada. Very, very athletic kid. And, you know, he just played in spurts and had flashes at Michigan. He was a free agent for some club, didn't make it. He got cut. We brought him in, and we just said, you know, I want to cut him. You know, if he can't make it, I want to be the guy to figure out that he can't make it. So it's just that, you know, you're enamored with his traits, and you just want to see, well, the other team may have screwed up. They didn't see the traits the way we saw the traits, and we want to be able to work with them and see if we can make something out
of it. That makes sense. Hey, Greg, I know on National Football Post you've been doing rookie reports for several teams. You got the Rams report up today. Have you done one on the Bills rookies yet, or is that coming down the pike a little bit?
I've been waiting for Watkins to play.
Yeah. So. Well, I think tomorrow he's going to play a little bit.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, I think he had one catch in the opening game, and he hasn't had anything since, and he got dinged up. So I'm really waiting for him to play. I was looking for some – like, I watched the game last week, hoping that he would play last week, because then I could have had an Evans versus Watkins comparison.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. So, you know, I'll just see what happens going into the first part of the season or tomorrow in tomorrow's game. But I wouldn't expect them to play him too much tomorrow because they don't want him to get hurt.
Right. I think he'll play a little, but not much. Do you have any thoughts on what you've seen of the Bills so far in four preseason games, Greg?
You know, I think the offense is struggling. The defense is obviously really strong. Manuel's been up and down so far in the preseason. And granted, you know, you try to show as little as you can during the preseason, and it's not what you're showing in preseason and what they're going to show against Chicago in the opener are two different things. But I think that has to be a concern. Their quarterback situation hasn't been good. I think other than that, they've got a pretty good, you know, they've got a good lineup on offense, but it revolves around the quarterback, and if he doesn't play good, then, you know, they're going to be out to lunch. But on defense, they're going to be a tough team to score against.
Yep, sounds fair. Greg, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight. Love your work on National Football Post. I would encourage any football fan who's interested in how these roster decisions are made to go to National Football Post and look at your post. It's August 17th, the making of the 53-man roster. I found it fascinating, Greg. Thanks very much for being on. You going to go to the game in Chicago, the Bills and Bears opener?
My kids are. I'm not.
Okay.
I got to, you know, actually I'm writing for one of the radio stations in town, and I got to do a five up and five down type column. And so if I go to the game, I won't be able to do that. So I got to sit and watch it and then get the column posted on the radio station's website.
Gotcha. Your kids Bills fans or Bears fans?
Bills fans. They still live in Bucks. I can't get them to move.
Nobody wants to. Hey, Greg, thanks. Great talking with you. Thank you very much for your insight tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot, John.
Greg Gabriel, longtime personnel man in the National Football League with all those years with the Giants and the Bears. Started out with Chuck Knox here in Buffalo back in 1981 in the scouting department here. Now he writes for the National Football Post, a columnist there. You can catch them at nationalfootballpost.com. And his director's report, about a week old, the making of the 53-man roster, some fascinating stuff about the process, how decisions are made over these next few days.